Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Colin Drew this week on the show. And, you know, Colin, I love these later in the year slates, like weeks 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, because we have all the teams playing, so no bye weeks. And you know what? People start to get injured later in the year. Veterans start to rest. And I actually do think that these are like some of the most profitable weeks for sharp players, for well-researched players. And you know, it really helps to know like every University of California fifth string walk-on running back that makes it to the NFL.
It definitely does. And I think the sites sometimes sharpen up the pricing a little bit. They got some of their flagship events and live finals and things like that. So I feel like they're always, you know, a little bit tighter on the screws on the pricing later in the season. And then obviously week 17 ends up being like a really interesting crapshoot because you got like the garbage time teams with the, you know, teams that are playing tight games, but in contention.
Yeah, so you have like the combo of like the Ravens and the Patriots like fighting for the one seed combined with like Washington just trying to like not get goose egged. And then you have, you know, teams are switching quarterbacks. It's fantastic. I really do love it. So we have to start with, of course, when you come on the show, we actually have segments. Like this is not just me and Leone being like arguing over like decimal differences in our projection system. So I wonder what people actually like more. Honestly, they probably like Mike and I arguing more, but what they're going to get are the segments. And our first segment is the coffin corner, which is all these injury situations, as you and I were referring to at the beginning of the show. There are just crazy amounts of guys injured that are going to change the slate. The first one to deal with is Baker Mayfield. I thought it was so strange that he came back in that game. It looked like he had the Drew Brees injury that kept him out for a month and a half. I was shocked when he came back in.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised too. I think it seems like there's probably no impact for that. I'm sure maybe like a little bit limited in practice or something, but the fact that he came back in means he should be pretty much good to go for this week. And I mean, they're going to be in a good spot, like a good offense to target. They're a big favorite against Cincinnati, and they have a very correlated or concentrated tree of options to choose from. So I like Baker in tournaments this week. I don't think he's going to be really on the cash game radar, but to double stack him, no matter which guys you choose, whether it's Hunt, Landry, Odell, you're basically like 6.5K for any of them. So it's a pretty reasonable cost for a stack. You get kind of like 18, 19K for any three-man combo.
But we might get Njoku back this week. Speaking of other injured guys, he might be back just in time for the Browns to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think I'm always like hesitant when someone's coming back that's been out for so long, whether or not they're really going to step into like the full role. So
right.
If a guy had missed a game and comes back, I'm you know more comfortable with it being out all season. Coming back, I think I would still take a wait and see approach until we got like some snap count under a belt.
Yeah, I think the biggest injury of the slate is this Dalvin Cook injury. So it's like a shoulder injury, and they are they're playing the Detroit Lions. They're massive favorites in this game, and from what I can gather from the team, this is actually an injury that he played through last week and then re-injured in the Monday night game against Seattle, and then they just took it easy with him. Now Dalvin says he's good to go. It kind of to me, this seems like a spot where maybe they should just not play him and they should let Alexander Mattison be the dude. Like, cause it just, I don't want to handicap and say what is more likely. I will say if Mattison is the dude in this game, I mean, he might be one of the highest owned plays of the whole year, I would think.
Yeah. I think the only way that's going to happen is if you get a clear report that he's out though. And I think it seems like what we're trending towards is something more likely that's going to be a tricky situation for DFS. And I'm guessing that we're going to get a report that Cook's going to be active and we're going to have to speculate about his workload. Right now, I think we've got him to RB2 in PPR, and that's kind of projecting at season-long baselines. I know in some of these contests, we have looked back and seen that, you know, they already were giving Mattison a little bit larger workload in the games where they've been like two touchdown favorites and giving Cook a little bit less in those games. So I think, you know, there's probably room to move even more to a timeshare if he's active in this game. And that is where it will become interesting, is even if you knew it was like a 50-50 split at 4,500, is Mattison in your GPP player pool? And I think he would be there. I don't think he's going to be on the cash game radar unless Cook's out.
he'd probably be in my cash game pool at that. Like, he's like
50-50.
Or not cash game. He'd be in my GPP pool like at a 50-50 split. Though, you know, it might be hard given how much Patrick Laird I'm going to be having. Like, I just said this on the Take Cast, but if Brian Flores says anything, I mean, I'm like, if he says, you know, we want to see what Patrick has, or we like the guys we like, if we get any kind of positive signal, I'm locking him in MME. Because can you imagine a world in which Laird has like 18 DraftKings points and I'm not like, and I don't profit off of that? Like, think of how absolutely sick I would be if that happened.
You just got to enter the Millie Maker, play him in 150 lineups, and that would fully complete the cycle. If you've been living in a bubble, Davis's other podcast, The Take Cast, had Patrick Laird on earlier this week. It was a really incredible episode. I thought you guys had a really good chemistry for a bunch of dudes who don't know each other. And like, him being a NFL player, like on that, he was very laid back. He was very,
yeah, he seemed better at radio than Peter and I, which it was like, I mean, and also, by the way, he's like, we were both kind of taken aback by how handsome he was. So it's just like, it's like one of those things where we were just like, this guy's just better than everything at us.
Yeah, that was an awesome episode. Obviously, Kalen Ballage got hurt last game. So Patrick Laird played on like 65% of the snaps, and Gaskin played on 20%. That was, and then Ballage was playing on the rest of them before the injury. And so, I mean, it seems reasonable that, like, worst case is probably like a 60-40 time split in his favor, with some good work in the passing game and a really cheap price tag on DraftKings.
Yeah, the thing is that we might get even more cheap running backs, though. Like, it might not even end there. We might, even if we get Madison, we might also have a scenario where LeSean McCoy and Darwin Thompson are the only two running backs for the Kansas City Chiefs. They're playing at New England, so, you know, not the best matchup in the world. But what's even crazier about this is, so Darryl is doubtful. Damian was not at practice on Wednesday. But it's that after these running back injuries, so he knows Damian is hurt, he knows Darryl is hurt. Andy Reid comes to the media on Sunday night and says, I know LeSean McCoy is 32 years old. I know I got to manage him. So this could be a scenario where the Chiefs are walking into Arrowhead planning on their sixth-round rookie from Utah State handling most of their running back touches, which is like, if you ever want an argument that running backs don't matter, it would be Andy Reid being like very okay with that.
Well, yeah, they're walking into Foxborough, right? It's in New England.
Yeah. What did I say?
Yeah. Arrowhead. But yeah, the other thing I think is really interesting about that situation specifically is that, like, the Patriots do try to focus on shutting out weapons, and they, like, it wouldn't be surprising to see a bunch of safety help with Tyreek Hill and then giving Kelce some.
That is what the Patriots did in their matchups last year. They just went hard at Tyreek.
And Hunt, in that first game, Hunt smashed him through the air for two touchdowns. In that playoff game, Damian had a really big day through the air. We saw last
Damian week, scored three times against them, I think.
Yeah, and then we saw last week, like, Duke Johnson had a really great game against them, kind of with a similar situation where they have, like, Fuller as the deep threat, Hopkins as the possession guy. They were able to restrict that, but it funnels targets to some of these secondary guys. So it's a late game. We might not even have the news before, like, it's a 4 p.m. So main slate lock, we might not even have the news on who's going to be active for Kansas City. And that makes it even more interesting for tournaments.
We'll know. That'll be a situation where Schefter tweets the night before. The Chiefs, I swear they got to have a mole.
Like, Shady is going to be active, right? He's not going to be able to tweet like, oh, Shady's going to play 10% of snaps or anything like that. Like, Darwin and Shady are both going to be active.
I think LeSean McCoy is maxed out at like 13 touches. I don't think the team is interested in giving him any more than that. I would project him to play like, so if it's like 3rd and 7 and the team is like, they're like, okay, Mahomes, we can't get his head taken off here, McCoy is going to be in and he'll play at the goal line. But I think on like a lot of like the routine, or if they're in like the hurry up or whatever, I would think it would be Darwin.
Yep. And then the last two injuries wanted to go through quickly. Greg Olsen got a pretty bad concussion in that last game, didn't come back. And Ron Rivera obviously being fired as the coach. Don't know how that's going to change the offense in Carolina. Not going to try to forecast that, but I do think Ian Thomas is going to step right into Greg Olsen's role. He kind of did the same thing last year, and over the last five games of the season was averaging 5 catches for 55 yards and had 2 touchdowns in 5 games. So I think that kind of puts him into like the Gesicki range of the projections, and he's just a stone minimum at 2,500 on
DraftKings. I'm probably gonna play him in DraftKings.com cash games. I don't even know. I haven't even ran our optimal yet, but I'm pretty certain I will be playing that guy. He's good, and he'll get 5 catches for 40 yards, and maybe he'll score.
Yeah, and I mean, just 2,500 is so nice. And then I guess the other one for Indy, Chester Rogers was hurt last game. I think T.Y. is still doubtful to come back, and they have the huge pass funnel matchup incoming against the Tampa Bay Bucs, a game where people are going to be really excited about stacking the Tampa Bay side of the offense. Doyle is going to be one of the more popular tight end plays. Zach Pascal and Marcus Johnson actually led the team in targets after Doyle last week. So even getting Marlon Mack back, I do think the injury to Chester Rogers, along with the status of T.Y. Hilton, are going to be really important, because the indie guys like Marcus Johnson's very cheap. Pascal, I think, would be an interesting low-owned play, because I think his price was up to like 5,500. I'm not sure people are going to be comfortable with that, but it's an important game to target given the total and the fact that the three-man stack for the Bucks is there.
Yeah, I mean, Paris Campbell is going to be like a very interesting play to me if he because like
last time when I saw him, his hand just looked like a foot.
Seriously?
Like, oh, it was from like 2 weeks ago, I guess. It was a picture on social. It was going around, and just like the sewing and stitches, like, I mean, it looked like a foot with like a football like laces on top of it. It was gnarly.
Well, it's easy. I mean, it's easy to play wide receiver with a hand foot, I think.
So I hopefully, if he plays, I'm sure the swelling's come down and whatever. Yeah. But
he was pretty involved when he was healthy. So and he's gonna get like those easy slot routes or whatever too.
Yeah. And it sounds like he is practicing, so that would be another guy that those guys, Pascal and Campbell and obviously Doyle, are gonna be interesting plays against the Bucks.
So how comfortable are you with the idea that that Ryan Tannehill is just going to be the stone chalk at 5,800, despite the fact that he's throwing like 20 passes a game?
I was curious to get your take on that, because that was my initial like pulse check, was like, oh, Tannehill and Jameis are going to be the highest owned QBs this week. Do you agree?
Here's the thing, man. Like Tannehill, it's great. Like he's like helping me out in some seasonal leagues or whatever. Dude, I'm not gonna be playing Ryan Tannehill for 5,800. Like he's $100 less than Drew Brees. I would be the all time like defenses don't matter fraud guy if I was all in on Tannehill and wasn't playing Brees at home for 5,900.
Yeah. And the yardage hasn't really been there. Like you said, the catches haven't really been there. And one of the things I find very important in quarterback selection is just the ability to cross off multiple roster spots via stack. And I don't feel like,
I don't even know if there's one you do. I mean, maybe like Janu, if you wanted like cheap guys with Tannehill, but that's it.
And I kind of feel the same way. Like I would rather overpay, and I don't even think you are like overpaying, but I'd rather overpay for a different quarterback that had an easier path to stacks. Cause like these receivers, yeah, even if the efficiency is there, they might be able to go off with a deep pass or two, but it's like AJ Brown, Corey Davis, like good players, but they're kind of like capping out at like 5 targets on a weekly basis.
Right, exactly. So it's just like,
so I think that's a pass. Jameis, yeah,
I think Jameis is chalk, dude. It's fine. Like whatever. I'll play that guy at, 25% of my entries or whatever. And just, I feel fine about that.
Yeah. On the RB side, I feel like Laird is definitely setting up for a chalk week right now. News could change that. Could be
Laird, could be Madison, could be McCoy, could be Darwin.
Yeah, but I think it's, especially with the success of this podcast,
here's the thing. Patrick Laird moved from 0% to 1.6% in the Millionaire Maker when he was 0% a play. So like him actually being a play that shows up in projection systems with all of this hype, it feels wild.
Yeah. So that's definitely going to be a big thing to reconcile is, I mean, what's our projection for Laird right now? And like, what do you think of a reasonable yardage?
So right now he's in optimals with 12% market share of the targets and 53%, I believe, market share of the rushing attempts. And I think that gives him like 12.8 DraftKings points or something like that. And I mean, certainly you have to reconcile the fact that he is a Miami Dolphins running back and he could just do nothing. He could just average 1.8 yards per carry and just have a tough day at the office. But, you know, I mean, that why you would be interested in playing him is basically all about the passing game work. Like, you think he can get, like, he can go full Leonard Fournette, basically.
Yeah, I guess one of the questions is, like, if he just hits the projection spot on at, like, 16 points, you know, still pretty good at 4,100.
Still pretty good. Don't know. He's definitely not in tournament winning lineups with that, I would assume.
I mean, I think it would be close, man. Like, what did CMC
running back has been so tough.
It's been terrible. Like, so there were tournament winning lineups that paid 10K plus for CMC on the floor game and still got there. I think he was in the millionaire maker winning lineup.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's wild. It's true, but it's wild that that's happened. Fournette, I mean, before we get to Fournette, what are we doing with James White coming off of, it's so funny, all year he has the lowest standard deviation ever. He's in between 12 and 16 DraftKings points for 9 straight games. Then he scores 0.9, then he scores 40. What's going on? Like, what happened to the Patriots?
It's wild. I mean, obviously it ended up being stuff where their hand was forced based on how the games turned out, and against Houston, it was a combo of the defense playing worse than before and the turnovers, which you don't usually see with New England. I think people are expecting that the Patriots will be behind in this game and will be throwing the ball a lot, or just in general that there will be a lot of plays running this game. And I'm not sure either of those is a lock. I do think they'll lose the game or it'll be close. But when they played the Chiefs last year, they ended up having to run a lot of plays and throw the ball a lot. But both of the games, they ran the ball on more than 50% of their plays. And I think that's going to be their game plan coming into this game, is wanting to run the ball a lot. Whether or not, you know, they fall down early and that has to be thrown out the window, it remains to be seen.
I don't know how James White doesn't get to, like, he's got to be the nuts.
Oh, I think he would be easy tournament fade if he comes in. Like, right now I do think he's going to be one of, like, the 4 or 5 highest owned running backs, and
yeah,
a 5 for 50 game is, like you said, it's very likely that
so it's so tilting that I played him in cash when he got 0.9 and then he had that game the next week.
So that'll be interesting. I would say only on the 4 p.m. slate, which is actually playable because you get like 4 or 5 games this week. I like Sonny Michel quite a bit on that 4 p.m. slate because basically the same price as White. I do think they're going to run the ball 50% of the time if they can. And I think that, you know, if they're successful at doing that, you could see Michelle have the kind of variance.
What do we think that Michael Thomas 8,300 and Alvin Kamara 7K are going to come in at in tournaments? Do we think that enough people are just going to be like, I don't care, these dudes mash? Or do we think that people will actually shy away from them at like season low prices?
Easier one for me was Kamara. I think people are going to play him regardless and aren't going to be quite as concerned about like San Francisco's front just because he's so involved in the passing game. I wonder whether or not people are going to play Thomas to the same degree they have been. I think everyone will kind of move off of Drew Brees given the matchup, and because of the prevalence of stacking, usually you see the wide receiver ownership tied very closely to quarterback ownership. And because people are off a breeze, I could see Thomas coming in lower than he has in the past in favor of some of these other guys like Devontae Adams or Hopkins or Godwin and Evans.
Man, I don't talk. He just feels like such a great play to me. Michael Thomas at 8,300. I don't know if there's anyone I would like. I can't come up with one reason not to play him He plays in the slot, and Richard Sherman doesn't even go in the slot, right?
Yeah. And I mean, just if anything, you should be fading whoever has to match up with Thomas instead of the other way around, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I think Robbie Anderson, as far as like chalk talk, early week pulse check, Robbie Anderson seems like he's getting quite a bit of buzz, has that favorable matchup,
had
his season high in targets, and that would be another chalk wide receiver I'd consider just Xing out.
Well, it's just going to be another week for our projections to try and give me Demaryius Thomas. I lowered his target projection in the back end from what it has been in weeks past, because I just like I can't get another week where I have like 28% Demaryius Thomas in my first run.
Yeah, I usually will dock it a little bit.
Yeah.
Or yeah, I usually dock it.
I don't know if I see any big chalk tight ends. I mean, I don't think Kelce will be. Hooper's a little bit expensive if he comes back. I guess, I mean, Kittle at 5,900 feels very nice.
Yeah, a great price on him. I sort of agree that the ownership will get spread out. It's the first slate in a long time where at the high end, we've got like multiple guys that people are going to be interested in. Like Mark Andrews, four people are playing Lamar. You got Kelce up there. You got Hunter Henry, Kittle, and then Waller just in that matchup, all kind of up above 5K. It hasn't been like, I can't remember the last time that all these guys run the same slate.
Yeah. All right. Popular game stacks. I mean, I definitely think that New England, Kansas City is going to be up there. Do you think that San Francisco, New Orleans will be, or are people done with the 49ers and their whack-a-mole passing game?
I don't think the San Francisco and New Orleans game is going to be a popular stack. I actually think it's an under-the-radar stack. And
wow. All right.
I don't think, even in the Superdome, I just don't think people are kind of actively targeting the San Francisco defense. And they don't have a bunch of it's Kittle is the only guy who's going to get owned right for that side of the game. So, if
yeah, it is, no one's rostering Tevin, no one's rostering Breida or anything like any of the running backs this week. Yeah.
So like a little bit of ownership on Manny Sanders and then Kittle. I think that's kind of it on the San Francisco side.
Yeah,
so I think
that's fair.
I think Tampa Indy will be one of the popular game stacks. And I think
that'll be the chalk. Yeah, no doubt.
But even with the Tampa Indy, we touched on it a little bit going through the news and notes section. But I think if I was going to draw up like a chalk game stack right now, it would be Jameis, Godwin, Evans, bring it back with Doyle as like a cheaper tight end play. And I think that would be a very common build. But I do think that you have pivots on the Indy side of things with Pascal, who I don't think people are going to want to pay $5,500 for, and then Paris Campbell coming back. So kind of like some of that as far as still playing that game, but trying to find different ways to get contrarian with it.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Here we go. Another new segment, 10 under 10. Is this just us making fun of Draft Sheet?
No, I don't even know what is the Draft Sheet thing.
Hey, I mean, he does the same thing.
But he
does it behind the paywall. This is free.
Okay, so some guys, I was just thinking some guys 10% owned or lower who could win tournaments for you kind of at a different position. Doesn't have to be 10 guys, but I think there are some good options this week. One of my favorite options of the week is actually Stefon Diggs in the Minnesota Vikings game. I've noticed that in these Minnesota games where they're bigger favorites, people shy away from the passing game, just expecting Minnesota to establish the run, but if they don't get ahead immediately, and we've seen it happen before, they do throw the ball and they're still willing to do it.
When was the last game they even actually did really establish it that hard? I feel like they did it one time this year, and Diggs had a slow first 3 weeks while Thielen was scoring, and then they've just been like a normal team after that.
Yeah, and I think the price point that he's at $7,600, it kind of gets lost a little bit just in the context of the slate. And I think because of that, he ends up at single digit ownership. I think people who go up would gravitate to Devontae Adams. I think just below him, you have both Godwin and Evans. And so he's kind of in that range where at face value, I think he's a tiny bit overpriced, not a guy you'd be looking at for tournaments, but it's definitely not an egregious price. And it's a great spot for tournaments. So that's my favorite wide receiver under 10% owned.
Devontae Parker, I think, is probably mine. 6,900 against the New York Jets. I mean, I'd be very surprised if he comes in at 5% owned.
Oh, Devontae Parker was – Drew and I were just tilting him so bad last week because our projections absolutely loved that for like a game stack. They loved the Eagles side of things, both the prices and their team total. And just generally the way that we like to build is building through a two-man – or three-man stack from one team and bringing it back with somebody on the other side. We had a reasonable projection on Parker last week to the point where I think I was getting him in like 10% of my lineups, but for whatever reason, maybe it was just the hangover, but I was not forcing a bring back in my Eagles builds, and it was just like absolutely smashing as the nut spot. And then when I went to look at my lineups, I only had like four or five teams that actually had the full onslaught with Parker coming back the other way. And it felt like it was so close, and I just missed like one important configuration in my process, and it was an expensive decision.
The hangover, it killed you. I was 1v1 Parker versus Robert Woods in cash, and I only lost that by 6 points, which feels incredible.
Yeah, you were probably tilting your face off.
I was. I was like, oh, I'm gonna sell my action for 5%. This is so stupid. I hate this. And you know, it didn't even end up mattering at all. I got a good running back who's just, he's not gonna be owned again, and he's just gonna fat it up. Leonard Fatnett. I mean, he's gonna get 15 plus carries. They're gonna get down to the 1 yard line. And he's not going to score. And then if they get down by 20 points, he'll get 10 receptions. It's just a matter of if he's ever able to score a touchdown again.
Yeah. What was his ownership last week compared to Derrick Henry? I like the other tilting thing about Parker. He was like massively owned at high stakes. So then I was like, God, this was like the sharp side of it too. And I'm off it.
No one in any format played Henry. I think like in like the high stakes cash games, I think the only one that had him was TJ, and that's it. I think he was like probably 5% owned in high stakes games.
Okay. Cause like Fournette, I wasn't sure if he's not popular, then I'm definitely interested kind of to the same extent I was last week.
He will not be popular in a 13 game slate where we're going to have multiple cheap running backs to choose from.
Cool. So yeah, Fournette I think is a good play. I get some of the other cheap running backs that are on my radar that I'm not enthralled with, but if I'm looking to make a pivot there, Kenyon Drake is still played 80% of the snaps last week, and seems like a cheap price with reasonable ceiling if he's going to get that workload going forward. And then the other guy was Carlos Hyde, who still receives the majority of the carries for the Texans. Obviously, Duke Johnson had his week last week because of how the Patriots were kind of attacking the Texans, but the Texans are expected to win this game. So I think it could be a week where Hyde gets a little bit more work if you're looking for like a 4K pivot. But like you said, I think that the Chiefs backfield kind of has some of the most allure to it.
Yeah. I mean, I played 40% Darrell Williams in MME last week. And I was like, he scored that touchdown on like the swing play in the first quarter. And I was like, oh dude, I'm rich. And that was it. Yeah. I don't think he touched the ball again. And he got hurt, and the next time that he did, there's a very good chance of the KC backfield just ends up being tilting. Like those guys need touchdowns to produce, because what happens so often is Mahomes just throws these like 70-yard bombs and the drive is over.
Yeah, I could imagine being tilted in that.
I mean, it's kind of a bummer of a season for the Chiefs, honestly. Like,
well, I mean, they could easily win the Super Bowl, but from a fantasy perspective,
I mean, from a fantasy perspective and like a regular season perspective, it's just kind of been like, there's very, very little to like get super excited about. Like Mahomes has been great, but he hasn't been Superman. And yeah. Tyreek has really only had one game.
They win this game, they're going to be in second place. They're going to get the bye. They're going to be home field, you know, in the second round. So. Gonna be somewhat excited about that.
I mean, maybe it's because I don't live in Kansas City anymore and I'm not there around it every single day, but it does feel more underwhelming to me. Though I guess I was excited about the Cowboys too, and they suck now also.
And then I think the other guys that are at least like in the back of my mind as far as low owned guys that could be below 10% owned that have upside and still in the Kansas City game. And I think DeMarcus Robinson, 3,300. And then, man, I struggle to want to do it, but Sammy Watkins at 4,600.
Dude, Kim, don't even say his name.
Like, once you're down so much on Sammy Watkins, can't, like,
just the Sammy, no the Sammy Watkins Martingale. Like, we just keep going until it gets there.
But if you kind of buy into the same reason you're attracted to the running backs, you buy into the notion that they're going to focus on shutting down Tyreek Hill and Kelce, and the offense will flow from there, then Watkins would be one of the guys who sees more single coverage.
He's just too bad, dude. He just is too bad of a player. I think he's 4,600. I played Sammy Watkins in cash this year at 7K.
It's never good when you're just not even remotely considering a guy that's like $3,000 below his max price that you paid cash
for. Our baseline target share for him was 24%. This week in the projections, he's at 16%, and if 16 might be too high. I believe he was not targeted in that win against Oakland.
That's the other thing that's impressive is when your team puts up like 40 points and just getting no action. But I think it looks like he had 3 targets last week. He's still at 19% of the season, so might be a little low on him.
Feels like it's not low enough. Feels like it's not low enough. It's just, I mean, it is one of those situations where it's been bad game by week, bad game. So the last time we've seen him even involved was like legit a month ago.
Yeah. So I guess to take us out of here, what's the kind of macro strategy for you this week? Are you pretty comfortable with the chalk running backs? Do you feel like that's a spot that you're fine kind of playing them and looking for your pivots elsewhere? Or
so it seems like my angle for the week is already not going to be owned, because if people are not going to be chasing after this New Orleans San Francisco game, which is this is the number one biggest must win game for both of these teams. This is like super important for bye week purposes, for seeding purposes. Both of these teams have to win this game. And I am, you know, a defenses don't matter tout. So I can't be shying away from $8,300 Michael Thomas or $7,000 Alvin Kamara because of a bad matchup. And then I also think the fact that San Francisco has just given up on playing these bad wide receivers, like Dante Pettis doesn't even play anymore. So I think Debo is in play. I think Kittle is obviously a great being back. And then, I mean, Tevin is egregious, but 5,100 for him for a guy who is like legit has like a 30-point ceiling, he'll probably be in my player pool too.
Yeah. I think like right now I feel like some of the chalk I was comfortable with is at RB. The two guys I weren't or not comfortable with are James White, who I think could get ridden out of a game script. I mean, you played him in cash and he put up less than 2 DK points. So
like, love that for me.
So that is one of the guys I think I would consider actually taking ownership into account at RB. Devontae Freeman was the other guy who I just don't think he's that good of a value compared to what his role's been. And it seems like he's getting a lot of buzz early on in the week, and I could see like a pretty easy path to him failing as well, despite the matchup. We'll see if I change my mind on Freeman, but White's definitely a guy I'd be looking to pivot considering everything we know about the Patriots. And then I think the popular game stack that I would target the most is the Tampa Bay Indy side of things. I like the concentration correlation on the Tampa Bay side. And then I like the fact that I think I can find pivots at low ownership that differentiate the game stack on the Indy side. So I'm still fine kind of playing a semi chalky stack as long as I can get a contrarian way to bring it back and separate that lineup.
Word. All right. Well, everyone, make sure to check out dailyroto.com as the week goes on. I'm not sure who's on the flagship podcast tomorrow. It's probably Drew Dinkmeyer and Ricky Sanders. So be ready for that. And the Friday pick show as well, back on schedule after a few interruptions due to Thanksgiving. And good luck, everybody.